So I welcome you. This is Trish welcoming you to our Q&A call today, September 1st, Thursday afternoon. And we're looking at a couple of issues today and maybe others as we explore the work we're doing for women with breast cancer and other kinds of cancer. And so Carol, go ahead and if you'll go ahead and share that question that you had shared with me a few days ago, then we can plunge right in.
Sure. I'd be glad to. We have just recently, last winter, started our equine assisted learning program. And so we're in the process of taking some of the components from your program and adding a few of ours and doing, you know, adding a breast cancer component to ours. What I anticipate is that once we get going is, you know, people trying to sign up, but, you know, maybe not feeling like they could afford to pay for it. We are not a nonprofit, and right now that the cost of applying for that is just too prohibitive for us. So I know that in listening to some of these before, that Writing Beyond, I'm thinking, I'm writing this, that it is also does not have nonprofit status. But I know that you do get some tax-deductible donations. So just trying to figure all that out, and how do you do that, and how
sure.
can you find something that way?
Okay, so first of all, I want to just mention that you do need to check with your particular state about what is legal in your state. But I've handled this in Texas and here in Oregon, and it seems like in a couple of other states. But so the thing is that, and it may be that it's a federal issue. I really actually forget exactly where the laws are set out, but for sure you want to check with your state laws anyway. So the thing is that there is a provision for what is called a fiscal agent that a bona fide nonprofit with a 501c3 status, that's important. They have to have the 501c3 status,
right,
which is a federal designation. And that means that they can receive donations, and the people who give the money can put it on their tax return as a tax-deductible donation. So now what that means is that that they can act as a fiscal agent for someone like us who is not a nonprofit, and that means that they will receive donations and then write a check to and turn that money over to Writing Beyond in this case. Now, we're fortunate in this particular situation that the Way Foundation has offered to not make any charge for that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's pretty customary though to charge maybe 10%. Even of the whatever comes in that stays with the nonprofit, and that's for their the work that they do in terms of managing it. And now there was an organization here locally at one time called Bread for the Journey, and it's a national organization, and there was a local chapter here, and their mission is strictly to do that, to give money to startups. They solicit money from all over, and then they have these local chapters who, when, you know, someone's trying to get started, they will sometimes make grants. They're usually smallish grants, like $300 to $500. But they'll also work as a fiscal agent. And now they, several years ago, worked as a fiscal agent for a program that I was doing for at-risk teens, and I had a $10,000 grant, or it wasn't a grant, it was a donation, okay, that went through them, and they did not, at that time, they didn't charge me the 10%, but they evidently they had a policy change shortly after that, and they said that in the future they would be charging something, and I don't remember if it was 5% or 8% or 10%, but I'm just saying that that's pretty customary.
Mm-hmm.
The organization that I'm working with, first of all, the guy who is the director is a friend, and and he said as long as it's not a whole lot of work for him, then he's not going to charge, you know.
Okay.
And so
yeah.
That brings up the other thing. I actually know quite a few people who could have technically been a fiscal agent for
mm-hmm.
Writing Beyond, but I chose them because they're an outdoor program. You know, they have their mission and their work is somewhat aligned with what we do, you see.
Yes.
And I think that's helpful for you to have a fiscal agent
mm-hmm.
who has some kind of alliance with what you're doing. Otherwise, people are kind of
mm-hmm.
confused.
Right.
Like, you know, if it's, you know, like if the nonprofit is for baseball, for instance.
Yes.
Well, it's just like
right.
It confuses people, and that's not helpful. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to, and generally, you know, nonprofits want to support other good works. I mean, that's what
mm-hmm.
they're doing things for. And so they if they can be a, you know, offer to be a fiscal agent, they're often happy to do that. So that's what you're looking for, is someone who's willing to do it. Now, I have had occasionally, it seems like a while back, there was a nonprofit who was willing to do it, but they'd never done it before. So I would suggest since you've never done it,
mm-hmm.
you want to do it with another nonprofit who has done it, okay? So,
right. mm-hmm.
I mean, in that case, I was able to explain to that organization how they would do that, how they would be a fiscal agent. But if you've never
right.
done it before, you don't want both of you to be new to
sure.
it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking for someone who's done it before. And
mm-hmm.
the Way Foundation has acted as a fiscal agent several times.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually have had some bad experiences with it, you know, with some of the other people where they didn't feel real good about where the money was going
mm-hmm.
with the organization that they were acting as fiscal agent to, and they started becoming uncomfortable that they were supporting something that they weren't too sure about, that
mm-hmm.
that it was had some integrity, okay? And so, you know, so you just want to be working with someone where a lot of that's not going to be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because they, you know, in this case, because he knows me, you know, and he's followed my work for years, he wasn't concerned about getting into that sticky situation again, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And so there are those kinds of issues that come up. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
basically, on their end, it's basically an accounting issue, okay?
Right.
That it,
mm-hmm.
the money comes in, it's tagged, it, you know, it's you want, and you also you want a written agreement about it, you know, because so that, you know, like in this case, if that friend of mine, you know, passed away suddenly,
mm-hmm. sure.
and there, you know, our funds were still coming into that bank account, the rest of the organization needs to know that we have a legal agreement.
Right. Right.
You know, and so anyway, the money comes into them, and then they write checks occasionally to turn that money over to us. Then,
mm-hmm.
so then that means that when they are doing their tax returns, they have to account for that. See, so there's
mm-hmm.
there's a little. I mean, it's not that much work in a way, but you know, it's just that they need to know how to do that, the
mm-hmm.
accounting piece of it, and to attend to it. With, you know, for tax purposes, for their
mm-hmm.
their own tax return purposes. So, I mean, that's essentially it. It's a, an arrangement that the government set up to allow organizations to get started. You know,
mm-hmm.
now, in my case, I'm And so I've taken advantage of it that way, where I was going to become, you know, going to become a nonprofit, mm-hmm. but I wanted to, you know, it takes a while, you know, so you can
right.
still, you can, especially for startup, you often, you know, you can't put the cart before the horse, so you need the money to come in, but people don't want to give you the money if they're not going to get a tax break mm-hmm. for it. So you got to find
right.
someone. And then you use some of that money to file for nonprofit and get your
right.
status. And,
yeah, because that's expensive.
Yeah, and so then the other thing to understand is that people who come to your program and receive services, they can't make a donation for their services, you might say. They can't be paying, you can't make it sound like they're paying for their services and
mm-hmm.
then they're going to get a tax benefit for it. That's
mm-hmm.
not legal. Okay,
right.
The services have to be free, and then if they want to give a donation at a separate
mm-hmm.
time in support of the organization, that's fine, but you can't
mm-hmm.
you can't say, you know, when they come to their first session, for instance, okay, you want to make a donation so that you can have this service, that's not legal.
Right.
Okay. You understand
right.
that? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And now sometimes there are events that people go to, and they will make a donation, and then part of that donation is tax deductible. And part of it is not. Part of it pays for the event, for their admission
mm-hmm.
to the event.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another arrangement that's done sometimes, you know, where part of, and then they have to have a receipt for that,
right.
stating how much is considered donation
mm-hmm.
and for a portion of it, you know, of what they've
mm-hmm.
just given. That's another way of handling
right.
monies that way. So,
You said, you know, you would need that. I would need to check with my state to find out how do I do that? Is there like what department or where? How would I find that out if we can do that in Tennessee?
Well, you talk with the state government, and they would have some kind of a. Well, you would check with the state government, but in I know in California and Oregon and Texas, there are in any city, even here in Medford, which is only 75,000 people, there is an organization that is specifically set up to help nonprofits get going, to train them, to provide resources, reading resources, and we also here in Oregon have a great book, a handbook that's real user-friendly that explains everything you need to know about being a nonprofit, and it's written from the standpoint of Oregon state laws. So I'm sure there's something like that available to you in Tennessee.
Okay.
You just need to – I would just call like your United Way, for instance. And
oh,
ask
okay.
them what the resources are, you know, and so there's those organizations fulfill a really important role in the sense that a lot of people decide to set up a nonprofit and they get a small group of their friends together to be the board of directors and you know, months or a few years down the way, they realize things become dysfunctional pretty quickly sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they just haven't been trained. It's just ignorance about
right.
what's involved in being a board member of a nonprofit. They have really,
mm-hmm.
they have specific responsibilities that they often join a board for a nonprofit with no knowledge of what they're committing themselves to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody has a real clarity on it, and then it becomes a real problem. I mean, there's a lot of problems that can happen. I think one of the worst ones is that the board starts taking over the program. you know, there's not a clear definition between what the board's job is and what the staff's job is, and
right.
that creates really enormous problems in an organization, because you know the staff feels like, you know, they're on the premises, they're on the job, hands on, they know what needs to happen, and the board has a different perspective, and they're, if they think it's their job to run things, to make policies and so forth about how the actual work is done, then you've got a big problem on your hands. And it,
mm-hmm.
and it basically has to do with that things weren't clarified in the beginning. And that comes down to a training of your board and of you
mm-hmm.
as a whatever, if you're the director. And mm-hmm. so it's really important that you get educated about these kinds of things, not only your state issues, but just the general kinds of issues that come up with nonprofits, because they definitely offer a really, really important legal status for getting good work done in a community without
mm-hmm.
it having to have the business structure that a company has, you know. And
mm-hmm.
so, but it has its pitfalls, you know. And it really, frankly, is a full-time job. Okay,
right.
To run a board
yeah.
correctly,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I have been avoiding doing it. I've
right.
set up two nonprofits, and I know what it takes to
mm-hmm.
have an effective board, and I just don't want to do that right now.
Right.
So, I'm staying with the fiscal agent for the near future.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody else came into our circle of volunteers and saw a need for us to become a formal nonprofit and wanted to handle that, then that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it. And, yeah,
okay.
So, you know, there's a couple of other people who have joined the call, and so maybe, I don't know if they have any comments or questions about this issue of how to handle tax-deductible donations when you're not a formal nonprofit yet. So do you all, there's Laura and Jan are on the line. Any questions about this topic?
Yeah, I don't really know.
Go ahead.
This is Laura. Yeah, I don't
yeah,
really
Laura?
Know specifics on that topic, but I just want to reinforce what you just said about a board of directors, because I ran a therapeutic riding center for a little while, which was a long story, but it's so hard to engage people to be active on the board. A lot of people just feel they come to the meeting and that's their whole responsibility. And so the employees, if there are any, take up the slack for everything.
Right. Yes. That's another downfall. Either they take too much responsibility in crossing into their out of their a proper role, you might say, or they don't do anything.
Yes. And actually, it's pretty funny because I had that one situation you just said too, and it was like he would drive everybody crazy because he was taking on everybody's responsibility.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, it just has to do with laying it out at the very beginning. Like, this is what the board of directors, you know, I always talked about it, that the job of the board of directors is to enlist community support. Okay, so that has to do with, you know, getting the word out about the work, the program, the organization, and bringing in money, you know, soliciting donation, making donations themselves. They are expected to donate themselves. And
mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they also can be responsible for sort of like accounting and legal policies, legal protection of the organization. That's also important. So it's helpful to, you want to look at like what kinds of expertise you want on your board, like in terms of an accountant or a lawyer and things like that. But all that's available, I'm sure, Carol, in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are guides. It's really a fabulous guide that I found here in Oregon when I moved here 20-some years ago, that mm-hmm. it was the best one I'd ever seen because it was not technical. I mean, all the technical stuff was in here, but it was mm-hmm. presented from the standpoint of someone like you and me, like, what mm-hmm. do we need to know? It was really user-friendly and inspiring, and it had information and advice and little stories, and it was just great. So, yeah. And, again, it has to do with preparation. And then, you know, the other thing is that you have retreats for the board, that they make that commitment. They know when they say they're going to join the board that there's going to be a retreat, a day long at least, maybe 2 or 3 days retreat every year or two or something like that, whatever you want to do. But there's got to be strategic planning that goes on so everybody's on the same page. And that has to be – that just takes the time that a lot of people just don't think they have. But, you know, you don't want them on the board if they can't make that commitment, you see. Mm-hmm. Because it's not worth it for all the complications it creates. Yeah. So, Jen, you were about to say something?
Yeah, you know, I really appreciate, I don't know a lot about the nonprofit status or anything like that, but the idea of it, the end is always in the beginning, and how things are going to end are really how we get them started. And to know that as a visionary, someone that's probably in a position like you or others that start programs, you got a really clear idea of maybe what it is you want to do, but there's all those other pieces that you don't think about in the beginning, and you're out in front leading the way. Next thing you know, there's a big snarl behind you, and I thought it was really interesting. I got to attend the Social Artistry Institute a month or so ago for Jean Houston, and there was an asset-based resource strategist who came in. And I think if you go about finding out what people have to give, even for as far as board members, as something that's really important to them, instead of saying, well, you're a lawyer, so you can do all the legal work. Lots of times you get a board together that might have people that are committed to maybe something with their passion. Maybe he's also a photographer and he'd like to be on your board and really what he wants to do is take the pictures. It might help people stay connected and inspired, but also willing to, like you said, have the commitment necessary to really go forward in an inspired way. And I appreciate that too. I can't imagine what it would be like trying to put a board together and then figuring out how to get everybody in the same room at the same time and make some sort of decision. That sounds hard.
Well, you know, another way, there may be somebody who really wants to help out but isn't ready to make that commitment as a board member. Okay. And, mm-hmm. and another role is to have an advisory board. And that's usually a group of people who have relevant expertise. But they're not going to come to your meetings, and again, you have to define exactly what it is you want them to do, because I've heard stories of advisory board members taking over as well. Okay, that they figured that they were there to give advice whether they were asked for it or not. Okay, and so generally though, what an advisory board their function is that you call on them occasionally, and that's what they understand, that they mm-hmm. won't be coming to board meetings unless there's some topic that they need to be there for, but that when something in particular comes up, like maybe you want them to, you know, go with you on a radio show and speak alongside, you know, to give their perspective on the work. You know, So it's just a one-time thing, you know, now and then, depending on what it is they can offer. So that's another way to bring in people into the nonprofit status or organization. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so Carol, is that giving you more than you?
Yeah, that helps. Yeah, that definitely helps a lot. I just need to, you know, look and see what we can do here in Tennessee. But, yeah, that definitely all helps a whole lot. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm sort of always on this campaign of don't try to do this yourself, by yourself, mm-hmm. okay? That you want to gather someone around you, since you've not done this before, mm-hmm. gather someone to be a part of your volunteer network who has done this before and can guide the process. You can just turn it over to them for a lot of the details. And it's important, really, to find there's lots of people understand about nonprofits and that sort of thing. And, you know, you just need to reach out and find who is there. Do you have volunteers working with you at this time?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, the sooner you can gather some people around, the better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's important to do it even before you get started. But, you know, mm-hmm. at any point in time, putting out a call for volunteers is extremely important. And because it's that synergy, it's that calling on the community, the resources mm-hmm. of the community that are going to make it successful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also going to keep you from getting burned out. I mean, it's great. I mean, here you are. You're reaching out to this community here. So that's you're doing that already here mm-hmm. with us. But then so the next step would be to gather people from various avenues in your own community. So
one of the things this is Jen. One of the things I appreciate that I see Trish you do all the time is when we gather volunteers, you're really open to what it is they might want to bring. And instead of looking for a specific list of resources, oftentimes someone shows up with a resource we didn't know we were looking for. And
mm-hmm.
their inspiration and that synergy is what keeps others interested and allows everyone in the group to really participate in a way that feels really beneficial to them and to what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the idea of you find someone who's an attorney, but their passion really is photography. So they may be interested in photographing some things for, you know, future publications or any sort of advertising and still be able to do a little bit of the legal stuff. But because you didn't know you were looking mm-hmm. for a photographer right away, something happened and it just developed in this
mm-hmm.
unexplained,
mm-hmm.
An unknown sort of way that's really organic, and that's what makes part of being in a group with Trish and Writing Beyond so much fun for me. I enjoy watching people's internal assets and things that they love come together and how we work together as a group to support everyone in this spontaneous movement.
Mm-hmm.
So,
thanks.
And you don't know what you're going to find. Waxes and wings, too. You know, sometimes people come in all enthusiastic and then, you know, you don't see them anymore for whatever
mm-hmm.
reason. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons. And so you gotta, it's kind of like riding a green horse, I guess I'd say. You're never exactly sure. You gotta go with the flow, you know? And horses teach us a lot about so many things. And then that is one thing, you know, going with that flow of people coming in and leaving and more other people coming in. And that's great. You know, it's so true. You think you want someone to help because they're a lawyer, and it turns out they really want to take photographs. Well, you know, maybe they have a lawyer friend who would like to, you know, take over that piece that you need, you know. And, you know, and so you just flow with it, you know. It's a little bit of chaos sometimes. Well, often, really, but it's there's a lot of creativity, and it's fun, really. So, yeah. So, let's. I don't know if Laura, you had and Jen, did you all have questions that you wanted us to address during this next time? These next few minutes, we have one other topic but I just wanted to find out if you all had something that you wanted us to address so we make sure that we make time for it.
Hmm.
No?
I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm good too.
All right. Yeah. Well, okay, so another person called or wrote me earlier this week that she's got a new program that's been going a few months, and a professional who is also so this is someone who has a program for any cancer survivor, not just breast cancer, okay? And she's adapted the Writing Beyond model to her own resources. She has an art therapist who works with her, so they have a part of each session is art therapy, for instance. And I'm sure she's adapted it in other ways too, but that's the major one I know about. So anyway, she had someone call her who has a program for cancer survivors a couple of hours away. And this person, she didn't know this person, but this person wanted to come and participate in her program. She is a breast cancer survivor, but she was primarily wanting to participate to get ideas for her own program. She was just upfront about that, you know, like in the beginning. And so she was kind of confused, I guess is probably the best term for it. And so as we, so I just, I ended up talking to her on the phone because she couldn't come to the phone call today. So, but I thought it would still be an interesting topic for us to discuss a little bit because, I basically, what I said to her was, you know, if you, having just started your program, don't feel like you're in a position of being able to have other professionals to come in who are wanting to learn from you, that you're not ready to start offering that piece of it, then I think it's totally fine for you to say so. And you may not be in that, feeling like you're in that position for, years, you know, or but there's nothing wrong with just saying that, you know, that like you're feeling good about the program for cancer survivors, but to bring in a professional implies that you're going to be explaining things to them, you're going to be, giving them a different angle on what you're doing. There's going to be all kinds of different kinds of questions, and that you're just not feeling prepared to do that yet. And because that is a different mission, that is a different function for a program to take on, that they are willing to start training people. And you just need to understand that that is different, and it requires different preparation on your part. And it's not just a casual thing like, oh, yeah, sure, come and participate and take away what you want for your own program, because that's you're just asking for more than you were expecting, I guess is what I would say, because they're going to have a whole different kind of expectations and questioning about, you know, what they're experiencing. And so it's really just whether you're ready to start doing that. I mean, you know, I personally don't know if I was right at the beginning or not, but because that's just my orientation is to train people to do this work. Because I'm on the faculty for the Equine Specialist Workshop with PATH, and I think maybe, I'm not really sure. I'd have to think through why it came pretty naturally to me, but I can certainly imagine when I first got into this work some 30 years ago that I wouldn't have leaped into bringing in other professionals, that's for sure. But now I welcome that, you know, but I wouldn't have someone like that. Another thing we talked about was that, you know, someone like that who was coming in would pay for it because they were not, you know, even though the program is free, if they're coming in for training as a professional, that's going to be extra time on my part, and I would expect them to be paying for that training. and even as even though they're essentially taking, you know, participating as a cancer survivor, then that's but it's still requiring a whole different kind of mentoring from me, and so I would expect them to pay for that. And you know, you've got to decide how much would be involved, and you know what you want to charge, and so forth. But anyway, that's kind of my take on it. And you're, I'm sure she's going to listen to this, so she'd be interested to know what any of you all think about it. She felt that it was very, our discussion gave her the language that she needed to talk to this woman about it, that she needed to defer from doing that. She basically wasn't sure how to say no, I guess is what I said. So anyway, she felt good about that. So any thoughts or questions from you all about this topic?
Yeah. Well, Trish, this is Jen. You know, I have not been a therapeutic writing instructor, nor have I been in this industry for 30 years. So I completely understand the value of not training someone into really, you have a lot of the training that you need behind you. I also want to mention that when we collaborated this summer and we put I was able to be part of the online training course, what it did for me was it allowed me to start thinking of riding beyond in a kind of a different way, and mostly about my position as a horse handler and how I dealt with different situations. And I think it strengthened my understanding of our mission and brought some topics forward that were really timely and important in the growth of myself as part of the organization, and I think for the organization as a whole. So I don't think it's a bad idea to think about what you would do if you were going to be training. I think that brings a lot of clarity, is what I found. But I also don't know, there's a lot, like you said, there's a lot of other questions. You know, what came to mind was, I really appreciate that this other person is wanting to do some experiential understanding of the work and out there. Maybe one of the half day or sessions or something where they could get some more experiential kind of hands-on horse interaction, and even in this other woman's program for the art therapy and all that, just to have the experience but not make it an actual training. I don't know. And have her define a language around that. This is where I am now. And that might be very interesting to her perspective of where she is in this exact moment and what she does feel confident to offer and what she doesn't. Something like that.
Exactly. I think that's exactly where we were going with that she needed to feel okay about what she was feeling confident about offering. And that this might be something in the future, but it was okay if she didn't feel ready to do that now. And
maybe it's the offering. Maybe she's offering something different that she can feel okay with. It's not actually a training. So saying no may not be the answer, but saying yes to something else might be. And she think about what that is. Yeah.
Yeah, she
because
felt...
I gained a lot from the perspective I gained from looking at Riding Beyond from a different perspective, from how do we help other people understand what this is. That helped me deepen and forward the insight and really glean them in a way that I might not have taken the time to do otherwise. And I feel really grateful for that. So even if she did it as an exercise without you know, just in her head, I think it would be a great an opportunity to look at what she has to offer in this moment. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think what was confusing to her was that this person is a cancer survivor and wanted to come as a participant, but also wanted the training for how to bring it back to her own program. And she felt like, you know, she felt, frankly, that this woman actually had a lot more experience than she did. You know, she's got a program of her own that she's been doing for a while, And so she just felt like that she wasn't ready to make that kind of, I guess, take on that kind of training role, you see. And
maybe it's more of a collaboration instead of a training.
Yeah, if she had just, I think if the woman said, I'd like to come and volunteer with your program.
That'd be
and
great.
Learn, you know, mm-hmm. And be a volunteer and learn about what you're doing by, you know, participating that way, I think she would have felt a lot more at ease with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was because she wanted to be a participant, she felt like that would be challenging. And I can see how that would be, you know, to be both working with someone as a participant and as a trainee.
Well, as we know, safety and working with the horses, you know, all that, the safety and the working with the horses takes a really specific set of understanding, and that's something someone needs to find somewhere, whether it's through PATH or, you know, and if someone doesn't have that piece behind them, then it's certainly not explaining that that's so necessary wouldn't be a benefit to someone who's trying to understand more about it.
That's right. And, yeah, and she, and so that was another issue that she's a PATH center, and the other organization is not a PATH center.
Mm-hmm.
So she felt like that there'd be a lot of explaining to do, that she didn't feel prepared to handle. So it was an interesting topic to think about and talk with her about. Yeah. So,
hey, Trish.
Questions, reflections. Yes.
This is Laura. I just had to run out for a second, so I didn't hear the whole thing. But in a person that would be coming expecting training from a person who took your training, wouldn't we just tell them that they should take it from you?
Well, that's what she. Yeah, that's a good point. She actually did refer her to me.
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure about that because I missed a little bit. I had to run out for a sec, but okay.
Yeah. That's a good point. She did contact me, and just to clarify the information about the teleconference series that's available right now, and so we'll see if she signs up for it, you know.
Okay.
She wasn't clear on what was free and what was paid and so forth. So I just sent an explanation to her, and then I went over to the page that explains it and tried to tweak the language a little bit to help clarify it for other people who might have the same confusion.
Right.
So yeah.
Right. Well, unfortunately, that put the trainer in a tough position as far as I'm concerned. You know, I don't really even think it's appropriate to ask somebody to do that if it's they're running their first program and they really want to learn from that person.
She just wasn't sure how to respond. She knew that she didn't feel comfortable about it, but she wasn't sure why. And so we just kind of picked that apart, kind of clarified it, and I essentially just supported her, you know, her in thinking where she's at to,
right.
you know, be okay with that. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where she's at.
Okay.
And So here we go. So any other questions or reflections or stories about things that have been going on in your explorations with this work, ideas, inspiration?
Well, I've been doing quite a few one-on-one sessions, and I'll just tell you, I mean, the horses never cease to amaze me. I mean, the last session that I did in the round pen, reflective round pen session, my horse basically, he communicates to me, you know, when we're in session, and he basically told me, stay out of the session. So he just worked with the client, and it was a pretty silent session, and I, you know, had to refrain from making any comments because the horse had asked me not to do anything. And when this woman was done with this session, she was just blown away. She said the horse was, like, talking to her and answering all her questions. And, you know, I was just watching the behaviors of what she was doing, what the horse was doing, and I was, you know, thinking about this might be happening. And some of those things were accurate. But it is just amazing to me how wonderful these are.
that's a great story, Laura, because I know sometimes it's hard for us to shut up and let the horse do the work.
Right, it was. I guess no, I'm going to shut up.
And when we can do that, I so know what you mean, to just allow the horse to do, get out of the horse's way. I hear some people talking about it, like, get out of the horse's way.
And that's a good expression.
We set it up so it's safe, and so that the channels of communication are open, you might say. And then to just step out of the way. That's beautiful that you did that. And then you had such good affirmation of it. That she,
she wrote a really nice testimonial, too, which was sweet. Because, you know, I have to get over my own, I ask people for testimonials now, but it got me a little... It took me a little bit to get to that point, you know, to be comfortable with, hey, say, can you send me, you know, one or two lines or something about your, you know, experience?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I know what you mean. I used to feel kind of awkward about it, but then I kind of got into the idea that to just say, you know, we want to share this work with other people and make it you know, available to them, and for them to hear a little bit about your experience could be so helpful if you're willing to write a few words about it, you know, and when you put it that way, that they, if they're willing, you know, some people aren't, but often they just come up with the most amazing things, even though they don't think they can write worth a darn. It's like, wow, you know, it's pretty... pretty amazing what comes out, and I think maybe they're amazed too. I don't know, but anyway, yeah. I think along the lines of what Jen was saying, that when they write down about their experience, they anchor it in their bodies more and in their minds, hearts, when they actually put it into words.
Right.
And it's really, I think it's very empowering and a potent process for them. In fact, I've sometimes thought, and in fact I do actually, make as a part of individual sessions, not so much in Writing Beyond, but in individual work that I do with people, that they do sit down and write about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, often that's, of course, more of a journaling sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
And not to be shared with anyone else, but
right.
But this kind of writing, of writing a testimonial, it's another angle of, like, really integrating the experience they've had and empowering it even more, I think, so that it has a more lasting value for them.
And this one was also interesting for me because this woman was a therapist. Right, and so, you know, it was interesting because as we were going through the process that I normally go through, she was making suggestions for her personally that of ways that it would work better. And that was interesting, too.
You
know? Yeah, so it was, you know, we started with a body scan and she wanted to do it slightly differently and stuff. And I'm like, okay, you know, we can. And, you know, it was just interesting to be more aware that somebody might have their own way of doing the same type, you know,
mm-hmm.
their own process
sure.
for accomplishing the same thing, you know.
Yeah, especially a therapist, and that you, if you're open to that kind of collaborative
interaction, you know, that can be very empowering to people. You know,
right.
It can take, get you farther in the work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's interesting. That's sweet,
yeah.
Actually.
Laura, this is Jen, and what I want to say while you're telling that story, I love that you trusted that process, and it sounds like embodied listening. And so when both of you were embodied listening, basically there was no verbal language that was interfering with the horse. And the sentience, I got a new term, I'm calling it sentient soup. And it lays around us, right? It's all around us. And it's like instead of talking and instead of eating with the big spoon, all of a sudden we're just gently dipping the bread in and we're taking every morsel. And I really appreciate that you were willing to trust that process so that everybody involved, including your horse, could feel the empowerment of that kind of deep embodied listening. And so glad you're tasting that sentient soup. I know there's a recipe for every person that comes through, so I'm glad that your client and therapist got to figure out something really meaningful for herself. That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's a really great word for it because, you know, I'm a little bit intuitive, but when I'm working with the horses, you know, I've learned to trust that if I hear something, you know, or maybe a person's name or something or whatever, I now tell, you know, I say that to the client, and I don't keep quiet about it anymore, and it's like, you know, 95% of the time it's like right on, and it's like what they needed to hear. So it's like, where do the horses pick that from?
Yeah, like you fine-tuned your body. Yeah, that's great.
Well, and can you put into words how the horse was telling you to stand back and not interfere?
He and I are very energetically connected. Like, you know, I've done a lot of energy healing on him, and he's my elder horse, where I do, they call it tabletop healing. So I'll have clients be on a massage table, and then the horses will do Reiki on them, if you want to use that word. So we get very connected energetically. So this one was almost just like, boop, he bopped me with the energy, you know, and kind of cut me off. I could feel when I'm connected to him because he's a very protective spirit. And he just basically shut the door. It just felt like boom. No words or anything, just boom.
Okay. I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
I've not
done that tabletop healing. I've seen pictures of it with an Equinicity program up in Canada.
Oh, yeah, that looks great. Yeah, that's a big place, not like my little 5 acres.
Yeah. But I sense that it can be very powerful. I've just never had the opportunity to do that. I just recently sold my massage table. It just occurs to me maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Well, I'll tell you, it was amazing because I had no idea what to expect, you know, because I do energy healing with people. And I just said, one of my friends was over one day, and we said, hey, let's go try this. We brought the massage table to the barn, you know, laid it out, and two of my horses basically just came over. And when I started running energy, they just participated. And my friend who was there, you know, the horses would, you know, particularly go to one part of that person's body, a lot with their ankle and her knee. And, of course, that's places where she had injuries. So the horses can sense stuff. They just kind of do it. I mean, I certainly didn't teach them anything.
Yeah, well, that's the impression I have, is that you just sort of create the space for it to happen safely and... Yeah.
But you do have to be careful, though, because, you know, horses naturally want to use their mouths, you know, and that can be intimidating to people, you know, so you have to be careful about that. And also I found with a couple people, just the size of the horse being right next to them brings up a lot of trust mm-hmm. issues.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so
a
lot of
stuff
comes out, and it's been a really big learning experience for me with working with this. I mean, I personally am not, sure how far I want to go with it, because I don't know if it's something. It seems like it's something that the horses are just naturally drawn to and want to do, but I also don't want to kind of wear them out.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I don't know what Path would think about that kind of activity.
I don't think they would. I had taken the training at Path, and it's liability issues are like really crazy with that stuff, because, the horse is definitely putting their head on a person's body. They actually sometimes just physically rest their head down, and then they may start chewing or something, and you just have to be aware. And I'm just learning to trust. I've been talking to the horses, and this is just verbally. I talk to them and ask them when they do get a little bit more active with it, that they just try. That I say, you gotta have to be more gentle. You need to raise your energy.
Yeah,
you can do it a different
set
way.
Set the boundary. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had one lady here who has. She's been here 3 times for the healing with the horse, and she had something wrong with her face. I don't know if it was a stroke or what, and she had a lot of pain, but she didn't have a lot of mobility with her face. And one of my horses just kept kind of nudging, nipping a little bit, like, pulling her hair a little bit, and giving me this face, that frustrated face. And it's like, she is a Reiki master, too, and she's like, I think this horse is just frustrated that it can't break through this energy. And then my other horse, the elder horse, he broke through it somehow or other. He just really focused a lot of energy. And she was like, this is the first time I've felt my face in like 3 years.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
oh, my gosh.
Something happened there.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, I was helping, but, I'm sure it wasn't coming all through me.
Yeah. Wow.
But, there is, it is a scary thing because, it is, people, it's hard because you see the horses just opening the mouth a little bit and you never know, hey, when are the teeth going to come out or something. And so it is a lot of issues there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people do it with the horses further away, and don't let the horses come as close, but I let the horses right up as long as the person is comfortable with that, so.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely trust issues for all around.
That's what I was going to say, Laura. I handle Mystic a lot, and we let her investigate people sitting down in chairs sometimes, and you just never know exactly how far she's going to go. But I find oftentimes it's me. I'm the one that has to spend a lot of time being really clear about my trust issues, because some folks are really intuitively okay with it when what I'm seeing, I'm not sure I'm okay with it. It's just a fine edge.
Yes, and I understand exactly what you're saying. I've been really looking into that myself.
Yeah, and it's just curious. And you want the horse to be able to have that freedom of interaction and wisdom and energetic sharing, but you also have to be somewhat close enough so that if something happens. That's why when we did the online course, I talked a lot about the leadership that I have to have with the horse way prior to ever stepping into an area with other people with her. And it sounds like you've done that with your horses too.
I'm actually working right now. One of my horses, my Paint, she's down for training. She's a little bit stubborn girl, so I pick her up tomorrow. Because I definitely was feeling a little bit too much of her questioning me. So
I really appreciate that I developed a relationship with Mystic that we at least can have a conversation in that pivotal moment that says, "Ooh, I don't feel good about this," and she can have some sort of interaction with me. And it seems like the clearer I get, the less I have to, the less I do sooner, so that the interaction doesn't get to the place where it feels really uncomfortable. We're starting to have an energetic that's so more subtle. And I trust you, or no, I'm telling you you know, step back. And most of the time, she can be trusted. It's just me trying to figure out whether or not I've gotten her attention soon enough that we stay on the same page, kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense, but something like that.
No, I completely understand. This particular woman with the problem with her face, she was really into dolphin energy and dolphin healing. And so, you know, when she found out about the horses when I went to give a talk somewhere, she was just, you know, she is just total trust. So, I mean, that was a big thing for me to watch. You know,
the face would be hard.
It is. Yeah, it's hard because, you know, we've all seen the pictures of what a horse can do to somebody if they want to.
Yeah.
You know, she was very helpful to me because, you know, she thought I was just concerned about liability issues, you know, which of course you are, but, you know, I was more looking at my own trust issues. And it was a great experience for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Try to work through some of that.
Yeah, well, this morning I was treating my other horse, Journey. He gashed his back right foot yesterday, and so I was trying to treat it this morning. You know, and he, I don't think I'd even gotten started yet, you know, but he just, he has this habit of kind of tossing his head around, and he just whacked me right in the side of the head with his nose, the bony part of his nose. You know, and it was just like, ow, you know, I was, and because he was feeling that I was, I'm sure it was because he was feeling that I was going to be like, I was preparing to do something that he wasn't going to like, right?
Right.
You know? And I don't think he exactly intentionally, you know, went after hitting me in the head, but he wasn't paying attention not to, let's put it that way. You know, and I just thought, you know, really, I mean, I nothing like that's happened in probably years, and I was thinking how, you know, things like this could happen all the time. You know?
I mean, I am just so much more aware, you know, whenever I go outside and I'm going to the horses, I like ground myself out and just really center myself, and now I kind of do it more automatically. But I realize, you know, in retrospect, when I was having troubles getting the horses into the trailer and stuff, that was all my anxiety, you know, just getting the horses upset. Now they load like, okay, let's go. Once I learned to, you know, control myself.
Exactly. Yeah, and when I go out this evening to treat that again, I'm going to be really careful about how I go about that. You know, that I establish more trust with him than I was doing this morning. It was no problem to treat it yesterday, but I just didn't think about the fact that he might not feel the same way while he was eating breakfast. And I was, you know,
I learned not to do anything with them.
Yeah.
Seems such a convenient time. Oh, I'll do this or that, but no.
Right. I had another meeting I had to get to, so I'd kind of, you know, squeeze this in, you know, kind of thing. You know, I was just setting myself up, you know.
Yeah.
Something like that. So, yeah.
Just one more interesting comment. I was doing the tabletop healing on somebody else, and the word blood kept coming through. And I mentioned that to her, and the lady just didn't really say anything. And, you know, half hour later, she goes to me. I've been going to a homeopathic guy for about 2 years now because I have problems with my blood. My kicks.
Oh, my gosh.
It's really interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. We're all connected in ways we don't necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, friends, it's a little after 2 o'clock, so I'm going to call an end to our call, and I thank you very much for joining us today. Yeah, and now next month in October, the first Thursday in October, I may not be available. I may be teaching in Petaluma, so I'll know more in a couple of weeks whether that's going to actually happen. But we'll find a time in early
October to talk again. And look forward to it. Thanks so much.
Thanks.